some time ago, you had an opportunity to meet Bob Lazar. I want to get your take on what you think of Bob Lazar. I mean, do you find him to be credible? Do you think he's legit?
Absolutely, 100%, 120%. What anybody ever says, you know, about Bob, disparaging Bob, I can tell you, I was the guy that was there. I was the one that he took to see the, he took me to see the flying saucer. He knew exactly when it was going to fly. He's the one that got a hold of the 115. I'm the one that saw the experiment. Him and Joe Vaninetti and myself made the experiment.
And the 115 being the element that the
powers the saucers.
The powers the saucers, okay.
And what we did is we took a bell jar and we put a piece of dry ice and we put the 115 on the dry ice, then took a Coleman lantern, one of those little, what do they call them, the little lantern panels or whatever they are, that shines light, and these are partially radioactive.
The reflectors?
Yeah, they are partially radioactive, and they're the ones that cause the light in the lantern to be so bright.
All right.
And they shoot out alpha rays. Now, the alpha rays are supposed to go out into space at, the speed of light, but we have videotape of that, the alpha rays being, pulled back down into the 115. So, the bottom line is Bob was real. The whole incident was real. Everything happened exactly as Bob said it did and I said it did. I've seen the Dan Burrish tapes. As far as I know, he never met Bob, but the stuff that he talks about certainly indicates that S4 is real and that it's there.
And to some people who don't know who Bob Lazar is, he was a self-styled nuclear physicist. He worked at the S4 test site, which is very close to Area 51 in Nevada, back in, 88 to 89.
88 and 89. I met him the summer of 88, and he came over here with Gene Huff, and Gene Huff was a real estate appraiser. And Gene had called me on the phone, and he said, I've heard about all your stuff. I'd like to get some of your tapes. And at that time, I had just been totally swamped with people that want something, and I wasn't too interested. And he said, I'm a real estate appraiser. And at that time, I was looking to get my house refinanced. I said, okay, I'll tell you what. If you come over and appraise my house, I'll give you all the stuff I had. So he came over, and the guy that was helping him hold the tape to measure the rooms was this guy, Bob Lazar.
He was helping the appraiser?
Yeah. And so we sit down and talk, and we're talking about UFOs, and Bob is rolling his eyes, and he says, look, I have to tell you guys, I worked at Los Alamos. I had the highest clearance you can get. And he said, if there was anything like this, I would have known. This is all pure BS. Well, over the next 4 months, and that would have been July, August, September, November, October, we gave Bob some information that he could check out with his friends at Los Alamos.
Right.
One was the existence of the YY-2 facility, which was really secret. Now, we were told that was where EDE-3 was kept. But whether he's kept there or not, the fact was that Bob found out that, yes, that place did exist. And a number of other things he found out, and he decided to reenter the scientific community. And that's when he called Dr. Teller, and I was there when he called Dr. Teller. And he said, I'd like to reenter the scientific community. And Teller says, do you want to work in Las Vegas, or do you want to work at Lawrence Livermore with me? And Bob said, I want to work at Area 51. And Teller said, well, let me see what I can do. And so then a few days later, Bob gets a phone call from some guys at EG&G, and he went over and over a period of 2 or 3 weeks got 3 security interviews. And on the second security interview, and of course he told us all what they asked him, the first question was, do you know John Lear and what's your opinion of him?
Interesting.
And he said, yes, I know John Lear, and I believe he sticks his nose in places where it doesn't belong. And Bob said, what I didn't tell them is I also like to stick my nose
yeah,
in the place
exactly.
it doesn't belong. So then the first thing, the next thing I heard is, I think it was around December 6th of 88, he's sitting in front of my desk here one evening, and he said, I saw a disc today. And I said, what? He said, I saw a disc today. And I said, you went up to Area 51? He said, yep. And I said, then what are you doing here? I said, they're probably following you. Why don't you find out what's going on and then come back and tell me? He says, no, John, you've taken so much flack over this stuff. I want to tell you that I saw it and it's real. And that's how the whole thing started.
Oh, my God. How did he describe the craft to you?
He said that he walked in the hangar. They let him in. He's always had 2 guards, one on each side. They led him through the hangar door, or the hangar door was open, and he said he walked by it and he saw an American flag, and he thought, well, this is what, this explains it. This is just stuff that we have. And he said he put his hand on the disc, and he said it felt cool to the touch. And he said only later did he realize, no, this can't be ours, because when they gave him access to the inside, you know, the chairs and everything were, you know, for people that were like 3 feet tall. He said, this is nothing that we could fit in.
That had to have been quite a sight for him.
It was, and it was quite an experience for me. I'll never forget those 2 years. They were the most exciting in my life. I wouldn't trade them for anything. I never thought in a million years when I started to get into this UFO business, because, you know, you just can't get any information. I never thought I'd get, you know, that close to what was really going on.
And at that point, you got to know our friend George Knapp, who is doing some fill-in hosting for us. I did an interview with George, was several months ago, and I said, you know what, George, I'd like you to fill in for us once in a while. And he did one show for us, did a great job, and because he is such an expert at what he does, he's a perfect mix for us as a team.
Absolutely. And how George Knapp got in, it was that I won't go into all that. There was three times that we went up to the test site with Bob to watch the saucer. The first one was May 22nd, 89. Then the next one was a week later. That was the one that George went and filmed. And then the last one was April 6th, a week after that. And that's when I went up with Bob, his wife's sister, and Gene Huff. And that's when security caught us. And the next day, they hauled him up to Indian Springs, which is the head of all security for the Nevada test site. And they said, now, Bob, when we gave you this clearance and showed you the flying saucers, it didn't mean you were supposed to tell all your friends about it. Now, do you want to work here or not? And he was noncommittal at that meeting, but a few days later, he decided not to go back. And the reason he told me is because the last few trips, when he went up on the 737 there, loading at the terminal, and the terminal used to be over there on Sunset, he said, John, I could remember getting on the airplane, and I could remember getting off it, but I couldn't remember anything I did up there. And he said, I didn't want to work under those conditions.
Yeah, never again.
So, coincidentally, about that time was on Sunday, I had done a show with George Knapp called On the Record. And George called that evening. He said, John, we have had thousands of phone calls. What can I do for an encore? And I said, well, let me make a call. So I called Bob, and this time he decided to quit. And I said, do you want to go and do the George Knapp news tomorrow night? And he said, yeah, as long as they don't show my face. So that famous interview of Bob was done in my driveway against the sun, so they couldn't see his
face. And that was a dramatic documentary, that whole program.
Yeah, and then the next night, George had Bob Stoldow come up. Bob was the head of Channel 8, and we sat around the table. And Bob, you know, asked us a bunch of questions, and George wanted to do, you know, a long six-part series, and Stoldow didn't want to go with it without being convinced. And after he talked with Bob and found out the whole story, he told George, go ahead, and that's where the six-part series came from.
You've touched a lot of lives and careers in this field.